Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, where each week I speak to pharma company owners, industry leaders, and innovators, sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. This week, I have the pleasure of being joined by Neil Sankar. Neil, you might have to help me out with an introduction to yourself here, because you are a chief medical officer, an entrepreneur, a clinician, a consultant, an advisor. How would you best describe yourself, I guess?
Good question. So, James, I am all of the above you stated earlier. So I'm primarily a clinician trained in medical oncology. And what I do is, you know, work with biotech pharma companies who are pursuing new drugs, new therapeutics, you know, to treat these advanced malignancies. You know, primarily not, I don't focus on any chemotherapy, cytotoxic drugs, but more targeted cell therapies, biologics, antibody drug conjugates, and so forth. And also, primarily within that space, I also work in clinical strategy, helping companies, you know, in licensing, partnering discussion, and so forth. So I also wear an additional hat with some companies as a chief medical officer when I have to do kind of a CXO role for them at that point. So primarily, you know, as I said, I'm a clinician. I like the science. I like the new drug development discovery. So that's where I want to focus on. I've not practiced for ages now, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And above. So I'm, you know, this is all I do day in and day out. And, you know, so I enjoy doing that.
Awesome. Well, I mean, yeah, to throw another hat in there, I didn't think there would be any more room for any hats, but seemingly there is. So look, I guess in terms of your current focus then, because I know that you're involved with several organizations, often spinning quite a few plates, and we'll perhaps come on to that. But you mentioned about not practicing for years. I mean, talk to us first, if we were to, you know, rewind and go way back, how did you fall into this space? Was it something?
Yeah, very good question. So I actually got into this by chance. It was not planned. So after I did my, you know, medical graduation in India, I went to the Caribbean, did a residency there, then moved over to Australia, got my public health graduate degree there. Then, you know, I had done step one, step two, and then actually wanted to pursue my career as a clinician because clinical research is not a known domain for me. I didn't know, to be frank, that even existed. I mean, I know vaguely, but I didn't know the details around it. So when I started my career with National Cancer Institute, you know, within the HHS in Maryland, while I was doing my oncology training, the faculty there actually said, would you be interested to support us in the clinical trials, which are sponsored by CTEP? It's an organization under NCI. And, you know, would you like to be part of that? And that's when I understood that there is clinical trials, and I had the honor of working with some real senior clinicians like Wyndham Wilson. He used to be the ODAC chair, then Robert Kreitman, very big names in oncology. And then I started working there, supporting their phase one, phase two programs. Then, you know, I moved out to the industry. So this was actually by chance. I'm glad you asked this question. This was nothing planned because I wanted to pursue my career here as a clinician.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I came here. But then things went in a different direction. I liked it because I like the science, you know. So I thought this is very good. I stay here.
Yeah. Nice. And are you, I guess you're grateful to those individuals that you mentioned. Are you still in contact with them all to this day?
No, I haven't. I mean, I think Dr. Wilson may have been retired too. He was, you know, he's a very senior person. So, no, I used to be, you know, when I stepped out during those days, you know, I used to be in more close contact. But then I moved to California. I was usually in D.C., right? Then I moved over here. And then, you just sometimes it just goes off the, you know, radar.
Yeah. So then,
yeah, but I think few of them I'm connected in LinkedIn, not Dr. Winda Wilson, but, you know, like Dr. Michael Bishop and a few others. I think I'm connected in LinkedIn and, you know, some social networks. Yeah.
Sure. Well, so I guess from those early days then where you kind of fell into the clinical research sector, how have things progressed from there? Because, you know, if I look at you now on LinkedIn, you've got a huge following. You're clearly a thought leader in this space. How, if you were to talk us through kind of the step-by-step process to getting
there? Yeah, so interesting question. Yeah, so since I moved into industry, I have to tell you that, you know, some interesting points I would like to make it, you know, let you know is, you know, within the industry, in my roles, right, mostly, I should not say 100%, but 80 to 85% of the people, they move out every 3-4 years, you know, they give pursuing different opportunities,
yeah,
you know, because the reason is, you know, they are in the project, the drug cycle gets approved, for example. Now they know the drug has approved, you know, let's go into another project with another new drug, new therapeutics, right? Go there and help them out. So that's what happened with me. So I moved around in DC. Then I got a good opportunity with Genentech in early 2009. So moved out to California. And then I was with Genentech for 4 years, being part of a very successful drug approval. And then from then on, I kind of moved around and then started my own consultancy in 2014.
Yeah.
And now I am working, consulting at various levels, you know, different roles for these companies, depending on what they need, what type of services they are looking at. So one thing I am very good at is time management. So depending on, I don't need a lot of time to kind of acclimatize with the project, right? I mean, I normally, in most cases, I just go in and they say start from, you know, I start taking over the project from maybe week 2 or even sooner. So because I have the domain expertise, right? I need to learn about that drug, that specifics, that's pretty much it. But then once I know that, then I kind of take it forward. So, yeah.
Interesting. What I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. I mean, what was it that made you go down this kind of consultant route where you're involved with tons of different companies over where often I'll have guests on and they have decided to found their own company?
Right.
You go down that. What's, yeah, was there anything particular or is it just how it's panned out?
So it is, so it's personal and professional, right? Personal, you know, I have aging parents back home in India.
Yeah.
Very aged, right? 90, father is in the early 90s, mom 80s. So I kind of go and see, take them and take care of them every 3 months. So I go for short trips, you know, get them checked, do their assessments, you know, blood work, all those. Then I kind of come back. So I realized that the full-time opportunities, corporate roles may not be the best option for now. Yeah. And then all of my clients were nice enough to accommodate that because they know wherever I am, I get their things done, right? I'm available for them. So I'm not going there for vacation. They know that I'm working there.
Yeah.
I kind of work in the night and, you know. And the second thing is it also gives me a lot of expertise working in different rather than being, you know, being, how do I say that, boxed into one project. You know, this gives me a better opportunity to work with different drugs, different therapeutics, you know, different modalities. And it just enhances your, you know, fine tunes your brain and kind of be really the expert you want to be in. I would say, though, even though that is my secondary reason, the primary reason was the main thing with drove me into consulting, right? That my parents, aged parents, drove me into consulting. But then I'm sticking with the consulting partly also due to the second reason. I realized that it, and I also help the clients, right? This also helps me in helping them. Some of these companies are new, you know, they have drugs, they want to take it. What makes sense to them? I can advance, you know, I can advise them, advance their products because of the prior experience I have in a similar situation, right? So this is how you deal with, because the more you kind of work around, you are, the more you are going to gather different experiences and use it, right?
Yeah. Awesome. And in terms of, I guess that's now got me thinking about working with different clients and things. I guess, look, from my background and recruiting background, how does it differ for you as a consultant kind of going into different sized organizations, different companies working in different therapeutics? Do you notice a difference in, I guess, the style of the management, the style of how they like to get things done, kind of the overall culture piece? What's your take on things, on how they differ from one company? And have you seen any trends?
Well, yeah, there is, right? So, yeah, obviously, it depends on company to company are different, right? I mean, it depends on the management, what they are thinking. You know, it's interesting you brought that up. You know, some of the management companies, senior management folks are from the big pharma. So their line of thinking is big pharma thinking. So they kind of go slow. A lot of the smaller biotechs, especially people who are much more kind of, you know, they just want to start something, you know, sometimes they kind of think more outside the box and innovative ways rather than. So company to company, it varies because it depends on the people and their origin, right? When I say the origin, not origin of the country, I mean origin of the experience, whether they are from big pharma, like some of them have worked 25 years in a big pharma, then coming into and doing a small startup, being part of that, their line of thinking is going to be different than somebody who has worked with smaller companies, you know, because they change too fast, right? They change their strategy and they are more tuned to the flow, right? So, yeah.
And how do you adjust to that? I guess, as you know, to be a successful consultant, you almost, I guess, need to be a little bit of a chameleon at times in order to fit in with what your clients are. How do you juggle that? Because I can imagine, I mean, I know just for my clients that I'll deal with a small biotech where it's like, kind of, James, I need this yesterday, just get it done, like this is what we're doing. Whereas other clients, it'll take a week to review a one page set of T's and C's or something, and I'm like, what on earth?
Yes, you're right. Yeah, so
how do you adapt?
So I have experience in both, right? I have worked in companies like Johnson & Johnson, you know, Janssen Pharmaceuticals, AbbVie, Genentech. Those are kind of bigger pharma, bigger biotech. And then I have worked, so I can bring both aspects of the thinking to the table, right? So depending on what the company needs, I can wear that hat. If I need to wear a big pharma hat, I can. If I need to wear a small biotech pharma hat, I can. So it's because I have the experience working in both sides.
Yeah.
So then I can kind of move around, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Sure. And I guess on that sense of moving around, I mean, do you have a preference though? Or, you know, I mean, I certainly don't need you to name any particular companies or out any particular companies, but is there your niche where you're like, yeah, this is my sweet spot, this is what I really enjoy, and why?
Yeah, you know, I like to work with companies where I see a future, right? Is this drug going to be beneficial? I mean, it's early to say, but you have preclinical data and you have early clinical data which shows some activity on these patients, then that kind of motivates me to more stay with them. You know, at the end of the day, even though it's a risky business, you also want to be associated with a drug, with a molecule, with a target, which is going to help the patients, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's everyone's goal. Science, the data and the promise is what going to keep me, you know, within one company versus other. If I don't see that a company has not a good path forward, then maybe I will take myself out of that picture.
Yeah. So it seems, Neil, like that you're genuinely in it for the good, and you know, for the whatever's best for the patient. And it's that part of things that you enjoy the most. That's kind of the aura that I'm getting from yourself. I mean, what is there any notable successes? I mean it may be a list as long as your leg, but you know, if you were to kind of highlight any specific wins or approvals or anything like that that really stood out to you with the company.
Yeah, I've been part of two successful approvals. One is Kadcyla. I was in the that's for metastatic breast cancer when I used to be in Genentech, and then a BTK inhibitor drug with Pharmacyclics, which is a blockbuster drug too.
Wow.
It's called acibrutinib. Pharmacyclics was bought out by AbbVie. You know, I mean, these are some of the, and then I also been worked in a lot of very interesting drugs, which have been bought out by billions of dollars. So a lot of the new generation of drugs have gone through my hands. I've been fortunate, I should say, at some point of their life cycle.
Mm.
So,
wow. That, I mean, that must feel pretty good to do that. I mean, when you speak to people perhaps outside of the industry and you explain that, do they kind of understand that magnitude, or is it kind of friends and family that understand kind of what you do as to, you know, to appreciate the level of achievements there?
Yeah, they did understand. Definitely, because they can allude what cancer is, right? They can allude to that. Yeah. Deadly disease, and they know I have bought in some of these, life prolonging, life saver, or whatever you call it, right? Mm-hmm. Drugs to the market. I've been involved at some stage. It's something they are happy to hear about. I mean, I don't discuss a lot unless they ask me question, because I don't want to be on a social circle. You don't want to be again talking about work, right? Already it's a very stressful environment, but there are instances where they have brought up these questions and had to tell them.
Okay, well, awesome. And in terms of, I guess, you know, where the companies that you have worked for, where they differ, do the challenges differ depending on the type of company, and how do you deal with those changes as a consultant?
Yeah, so the changes,
getting the drugs to market, and the challenges that they face with growth. Because if you're involved with strategy, I'm guessing your role involves a little bit of everything in terms of the drug development process. So what are the different challenges that different companies would face?
Yeah, the primary challenge, obviously, if you want me to go into the weeds, obviously finding the funds, finding the financial resources to move forward, right? Because this is a very expensive field. I mean, to get a drug to market, you have to spend around $3 billion+, right? Unless you are lucky, you normally end up spending that much.
Mm.
And that's a big number. So that being said, the challenges, one thing is to get the funds to take it to where it needs to be. Then you can look at partnering with big pharma. They can put in the big bucks to buy the asset or to buy the company. That's one. Number two is also the competitive landscape, right? I mean, you know, whether it's lung cancer, non-small cell lung, or you have a lot of these drugs out there, melanoma, you know, so if you are developing a drug in that, how are we going to, because the landscape, it's already a crowded market.
Yeah.
Breast, you have so many treatment options and it's a crowded market. How do you plan it? What strategy you adopt? Because, you know, this is a domain which keeps changing. Doesn't, I mean, 3 years prior to three from then, if you look at the treatment landscape has changed, right? So it's always, you know, you have to keep yourself in the lead. So I attend all the conferences. So that's what it helps. I see what's coming out. I go to AACR, which is the Early Clinical Research Cancer Conference, American Association of Cancer Research. Then I go to ASCO, the big cancer conference. You know that I sometimes go to ESMO, the European Medical Oncology Conference. Then I go to, sometimes I go to ASH if I work in projects in heme malignancies like lymphomas, leukemias. Then I go to a sarcoma conference, CTOS. So that's where I learn a lot of these things You know, you just put it in your brain, this is what is, these are the new things, because you look around the postures and everything, what's coming out, you know, then you kind of, yeah, it's always, you do catch up. It's always a catching up.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm impressed that, yeah, kind of with your experience that you're still so active on that, you know, wanting to learn stuff, making sure that you're up to date with stuff, attending all of these conferences. And also, you know, I was very impressed when looking at your LinkedIn profile at just, you know, what a following you have built up there as well. So clearly you are very much involved in the, you know, pharma, biotech, clinical research community, as it may be. You know, what is it about yourself? Have you learned something about yourself over the years that says, you know, this is why I continue to push forward? Have you got any idea? Have you even thought about that before?
That's a good question. Yes and no. I have once in a while, I think, you know, how long I can keep my motivation going. I mean, these projects I am currently involved, the teams are all great, you know, so I always like doing that. And the second thing is, you know, I have to thank a couple of mentors whom I always like to mention. They have been involved in my growth. One is Dr. Robert Sikorsky. He's a clinician, medical oncologist from Johns Hopkins, a great mentor. You know, he's a good delegator. I like, you know, he's very knowledgeable. I had opportunity, I even worked with him on some projects together. Great clinician. And so I like to learn from people who are, you know, who are stellar in their own right expertise. And then I also have Sunil Sharma. He's in Arizona, another great clinician. Learned quite a lot. So these two, I would always like to thank them. These are the two people I always thank, because they have, I mean, when I reached a particular stage of my career, they were the ones who were part of kind of taking me to the next level. So
nice. Perfect. Well, it's interesting to see kind of how you've developed, you know, in terms of the travel from moving to one country to another, continue to want to learn and to grow. And then, yeah, to hear kind of how you're still doing that to an extent. You know, I guess probably my question is, what's next for yourself? You know, are you going to continue doing this? Is there any chance that you might decide to start a startup, kind of into your career? Is, you know, I never say never and all that.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. If I get a good partner in business, I would definitely look at a startup. I'm involved in some startups where I have a lot of equity, you know, just so you know. But that being said, my own, I would, because, you know, one thing I always tell my friends is, one thing I lack is my business degree. I would, time permits, you know, education has no age bars, right?
Yeah.
At some point, time permits, I would like to get a business degree from a good school.
Yeah.
And, you know, to help my, because that's, even though I have the science, I have the clinical knowledge, I still feel having the business knowledge is very important. Because when you're starting, you know, you're part of a startup, you know, making it into a business proposition and making it to a successful entity, you know, you need to, you know, talk to investors. Yes, I do talk to investors now, but it's more on the clinical side, right? Not a lot on the, you know, they look up to me as a KOL in the domain, right? Not on the business side. Because there are, if you look in the venture capitalist field, there are a lot of MD, MBAs who are managing partners with a lot of companies who invest in biotech. I'm sure you don't notice that.
Yeah.
And that's the type maybe at some point I would like to do. I may probably roll back on doing the hands-on kind of, and then go into investment. That's one option. Second option is, you know, partly retire, maybe roll back and, you know, be part of few projects. And then, you know, like 50% work, 50% leisure, you know, that's because I cannot be without work, because, you know, I need my brain to be kind of always alerted, you know, so I definitely have to work, you know, some percentage, you know,
right, but that's fair. I think very standard, very sound advice. I think it keeps us young. You know, yes. You know, I'm just about to turn 40, but I used to recruit expat engineers who would travel all around the world building infrastructure in the likes of, you know, India, the Philippines, you know, all over. And many of them were some in, you know, into their 70s. One of the guys that I placed before moving sectors was 74, and he headed off to Tonga to build, you know, some road projects. And he just said, look, James, if I'm not working, what am I going to do? So I think it's one of these things, isn't it? If you enjoy it, keep going. And as you've said, you know, don't even be afraid to go back and study further, you know, improve that education. So hats off to you, Neil. I am very impressed. So it'll be interesting to follow your story. And I know that, as I say, I've come across you now on LinkedIn. I know that you've got a big following there. Is there anywhere else that we can check out kind of any of your thought leadership and kind of talks that you have given? Is there any that particularly stand out that I should be diverting our audience to?
No, I have also done a couple of podcasts. One, I think, through Forbes Network. I think it's an Amazon, Apple. And I haven't done any. I used to do voice interviews, but, you know, I don't have the time anymore. These are with investment companies when they want to invest.
Yeah.
You know, like Canadian pension fund. They have tons of billions of dollars they want to invest. And they had interviewed me a paid gig a few years back in San Francisco. So I don't know if it is there in the link. It may be. I haven't looked at it, but I know recently I did a few podcasts, at least two of them I remember. It should be in Apple, Amazon, and wherever it is. You can Google search my name and it should come up. But those are the ones. I mean, I don't normally do. I'm actually going to do one in the near future in India, a big event. But I haven't done anything here. I mean, I didn't have an opportunity so far. Let me put it that way.
No worries. Well, I'll keep an eye out for those. And look, I would say, yeah, to any of you folks that are tuning in here, Google Neil's name. Take a look at him on LinkedIn.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm sure you'll
find him. Oh, I'm all over the Google.
And I'm honoured that he has joined me here. But look, Neil, before I do kind of wrap up and let you go, we always like to finish the show with a quick fire questions round for guests. So I hope I don't stump you too much. I'm sure I won't. But look, if you could kind of roll back the clock and give yourself one piece of advice, what would you say that might be?
You are talking, so this question is a tricky question. You are talking in the professional life or in the personal life? More on the professional.
You can choose. You can interpret that however you like. If I said that.
Yeah, the world is small. Don't break any bridges. You know, that's one thing I have learned the hard way, the good way, however you can call it. Mm. It's a small world. I mean, you know, be nice to everyone. You know, be good. You know, things will all be good. That's what I believe in. Don't break any bridges because it may haunt you at some point. You know, you may end up working with that gentleman. You may end up crossing paths. It's really not worth it. Try to be a gentleman, you know.
Awesome stuff. And as you say, I think that applies both life and business. So spot on. Kind of my next question, I'd say we've talked about podcasts and kind of resources, talks, etc. But is there a particular book or resource that you either really enjoy or would recommend to kind of our audience, which is, yeah, life science and clinical research focused? Doesn't need to be industry related, could be, you know, something that is science fiction, but yeah, any book or resource?
Yeah, I mean, I have read, what's his name? I'm blanking out on the author. Is it Siddharth? I forgot his name, that clinician. He has written a book about cancer, I forgot even the title, The Cancer, The Mother of Our Maladies. Forgot the name. It's a very interesting book I read a few years back. Somebody gifted to me that. He's a clinician based in New York. I I think he's from one of those Ivy League schools. I forgot the name of the book. Cancer, the Mother of Maladies, or something like that. It's a very interesting book where he talks about the disease itself and, you know, situations around it. I think that's something, you know, yeah.
Awesome. And as someone, I guess probably my next question is, as someone that has worked with so many organizations, you know, if you look at your LinkedIn, the list almost seems endless. You're working with different management teams, different individuals. What would you say are the three qualities or values that you value the most? You know, where do you kind of see eye to eye with people in terms of, yeah, values and qualities from the teams that you work with?
You know, open communication is something I like, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, you work with this company, with this client, with the people there. So open communication is very important to me. You know, valuing of opinions, right? Listening. When I am talking, they listen. When they are talking, I listen. I think that's an important part. I mean, you could prevent a lot of back and forth, a lot of arguments, right? So listening would be number two. And third would be the trust. What I mean by that is when I am delegating something to someone, right, I need to trust him. I should not, oh my God, is he doing his job? Then if there is a doubt in my mind, that is never going to go away. You are always going to suspect that person. You know, once you have that trust in them, and it has to be mutual. And those are the people I work with. When they tell me, Neil, you can do it, go ahead, do it. I expect them to trust me and do it, right? Because they should also know if I am unable to do it, I will go to them and ask them, sorry, you know, I'm unable to, I need your help here, right? Mm. That trust, and that is something which has helped me quite a bit. Yeah. And, you know, I value a lot.
I think that goes hand in hand with your first value there, with that transparency piece, doesn't it? You know, kind of, you need to be able to say, you know, be upfront and communicate with each other. To almost
build. Yeah, you are right. But transparency, what I meant is, yes, you are right. But transparency more in the communication, right? So what I'm saying is a company is making a decision, right? Mm. I'm not there in that meeting. And then that's kind of noted to me, right? You know, you are not in this meeting. You know, we wanted to let you know this is what we decided. Right. That's the type of communication I meant, like, you know, we are looking to put out some fires. Mm-hmm. Two people are looking and that person already have started working on it. Then I expect that person to tell me, and I'm already working on it. Let me take a shot. And if it doesn't work, then I will let you know you can. So that's the type of communication I meant. It's more of, you know, not on a trust level, but more of communicating what's happening, right, within the company or within the corporate environment.
Awesome. And look, probably my final question here, look, we've talked a lot about work, but as you say, you know, often we'll be out socializing. We're not always working and we're all humans behind the scenes. So what do you do outside of the world of pharma biotech to relax and enjoy life?
Yeah, nowadays I'm not doing that, I have to confess, but I normally like to, you know, travel. Pre-COVID, I used to do work-related travel quite a bit, so I kind of get an opportunity. I like travel, you know, driving. You know, I stay in California, all surrounded beautiful beaches, nice. You know, listening to music and drive around. And I also like outdoor activities, going for a hike. You know, we have a lot of nice places here. You know, these are the three things I like, and I'm blessed to be in California because California can provide all of that.
Amazing stuff. Well, look, Neil, it's been an absolute pleasure to kind of hear your story, your take on being a consultant, how that works, you know, the intricacies of that. Look, for anyone that, you know, wants to learn more about you or follow your journey, which clearly is going to continue because it seems that you love it so much, what's the best way to perhaps either keep tabs on yourself or reach out to you?
Yeah, they can always email me. I'm in LinkedIn. They can message me. LinkedIn, I see messages at least once a day. if not twice, because it's very active there, right? So I look at messages. I get a lot of messages. That's why they can email me. I'm very responsive. I'm in the middle of something, trying to respond to them as quick as I can. Because one thing, you know, if I'm doing all this work, you would have realized I have very good time management skills. That's one thing I have. I have tremendous time management skills. So I put it, I will respond to them when I can. So they can always email me, message me in LinkedIn. That's probably are the best two options.
Amazing stuff. Well, look, Neil, thanks so much again for, giving up your time to kind of share this story, educate others on kind of your journey and what it takes to be a successful consultant. I know that I will no doubt keep in touch, but just want to say thanks again for being a part of the Huxley Morton podcast.